this December 7th through 9th. Check out the EdUp Experience podcast live and in person in Doha, Qatar for the World Innovation Summit on Education. We will be documenting the ideas and innovations from today's most influential global education leaders. Check them out at wise-qatar.org and follow the EdUp Experience podcast for more information.
Yay!
LeadSquared is a cutting-edge CRM platform for enrollment management. With LeadSquared, you will deliver a seamless student experience, streamline admissions processes, lower costs, and increase retention. Schedule a demo at LeadSquared.com.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the EdUp Experience podcast, where we make education your business. Dr. Joe Sallustio here with you on another what will be an amazing episode. I know this because my guest has a huge smile on her face. That's always a good sign of a good episode. And importantly, I have back with me for a second time, as this when this episode airs, a guest co-host who will tell you exactly what her name means when I ask her and I bring her on. But I have to find an appropriate sound to bring her in on. And she said her name had a meaning. She told me what it was. So here's her sound. Here she is, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Amardeep Kalan. There she is. Amardeep, how are you? Of course, you're the dean at Unity College and you're back again.
Yes. Thanks for having me back, Joe. This is great. I love this podcast and I'm so honored to be co-hosting.
Well, what does your name mean now that you brought that up to us before the episode?
So my name, Amar, means immortal or eternal, and deep means light.
So all together it means?
The eternal light.
Did you like to me? I like hitting that music now for you. It seems to fit. I had that pre-programmed and I'm just like, oh, that's a kind of matches up. Eternal light, always here, always bringing her A game. I love it, Amardeep. You know how much I appreciate you and your engagement with the EdUp Experience. So I'm honored to have you back to interview the person today that we have with us. And she has a tough job. We're going to get into that. She said she doesn't have time for listening to the EdUp Experience, so we had to give her a hard time about that. No, she didn't really say that. But she is she has listened to some episodes, so she knows a little bit of what to expect. We are going to throw just a couple of curveballs today, so she has to be prepared to answer some crazy questions. But let me bring her in now. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, Dr. Christy Fisher. She's Chancellor at Iowa Valley Community College District. Christy, how are you?
No, it's Friday afternoon, and it's been a great week, so I'm very good.
And are you excited to be on the EdUp Experience, Christy, knowing full well that when you say something, I might hit some crazy sound effect to go along with it?
You know, I am, because it's always fun to talk about the great work we do in community colleges. And when I do have time, I listen to the podcast and I always find it entertaining.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you very much, Christy. I appreciate that. First of all, let's talk about Iowa Valley Community College District. Where are you located? I mean, obviously the Iowa part makes a lot of sense, but give us a sense of depth and breadth of the system, rural, urban, how many locations, so we can kind of set the stage.
So we're a small district in the state of Iowa, in central Iowa. We have about 2,500 students. But we're kind of unique in the state of Iowa that we have two community colleges within our system. So we have Marshalltown Community College and Ellsworth Community College. And then we also have a campus in Grinnell, Iowa as well. So two historical colleges. Ellsworth started in the late 1800s and Marshalltown Community College started in the 1920s. So both of our colleges predate the system in the state.
So as we talk, your role, okay, so you're the chancellor of the district, and I'm sure you have college presidents or
we
directors.
Do now.
Oh, no, so you're the college president for every location.
Honestly, in the state of Iowa, the title that's traditionally used is president, and for some reason, Iowa Valley uses chancellor, but really I'm the president of Marshalltown Community College and Ellsworth Community College,
some of the confusion in higher education. We like to use titles and it's state-to-state differences. And that's why it's sometimes so hard to understand, but I appreciate that. So you have provost at that helps me level set there. You have provosts at each location, which is actually smart financially. If you look at a financial model,
Right? Absolutely.
Give me an idea of some of now that we're I don't want to say post coronavirus because I feel like that's not all the way true yet, but we're getting there and maybe on the downslope. Rather than get into what did you do during coronavirus, I'd like to know from you some of the difficulties, successes that you've experienced. What was a success as you moved through coronavirus? And now what is a challenge? You know, one and one. Let's do one and one.
I'd say our greatest success is that we did within 3 days switched all of our educational programming to an online and virtual experience for students. And we did that because our faculty are amazing. We had faculty members who had never taught online or used technology in that way, and their colleagues who were experts wrapped their arms around them and mentored them and helped them get ready to do it. And we did it successfully. So to me, it was all about keeping students engaged and making sure the educational experience was still high quality. So that was our greatest success. I'd say our greatest challenge right now is just really kind of trying to get our groundings and figure out exactly where we're pivoting and what we're moving to, because I don't believe we're going to go back to the way it was, and we shouldn't. We learned so many wonderful things, and so we don't want to look back to get to where we were. We're trying to figure out what's the future for us, and how do we move there in a way that brings everybody along.
Do you think there's a natural tendency for people to look back right now? Is there's a comfort in like, oh God, now that coronavirus is kind of coming, winding down, I'd like to go back to the way I was before, the way things were before. And that kind of can stifle innovation. It's very uncomfortable, probably, as you know, to just look forward, because it is uncomfortable to change and always look forward. How do you balance that as a president, as a leader with a district where I'm assuming you're not at every location to be talking to people about change every single day, right? You're either moving around or you're doing it virtual.
We've talked a lot about giving our colleagues and our students grace. Once the pandemic hit, we spent a lot of time talking about that and just giving each other the ability to have time to respond and being nice, quite frankly, because everyone's exhausted. So I think as we're looking forward, I mean, it's true. There's no way around it. And so while we know it's really important to be looking forward and not trying to recreate the past, at the same time, we have to acknowledge that our colleagues are tired. Our students have had, if they were coming direct out of high school, had a really weird end of their high school experience. If they were with us last year.
Super weird and unfortunate, right?
Yes.
It's sad sometimes when you know that going back to school, quote unquote, as a sophomore, if you didn't even have a freshman year, like, you know, my niece, she went to her first high school dance this year, right? She's a junior or maybe a sophomore in high school. So her entire ninth grade was just disintegrated, and she's like at her first dance. I'm like, what do you mean your first? Oh, wait a minute. There was nothing. One of the things I want to pick out about what you said is about the faculty speed. Now, Mardeep, I want to bring you in here because I know as a dean, you're overseeing lots of faculty, you're dealing with faculty. Faculty, you know, for as much kind of, I don't know, hits that faculty can take for not being fast and responsive, I think we've seen sweeping examples of really innovative faculty moving quickly to offer online, and many of them looking forward. Amardeep, is that the sense that you get too?
Yes. So, Joe, I was at Austin Community College when the pandemic started. We pivoted online without a single loss of any teaching hour, and kudos to those faculty who did that. They are very innovative. They were troopers. They plugged right along. And it was very heartening to see. And now too, as I'm building out this new institute, I'm talking to people, and people are very willing to work it out, but people are burnt out, like Christy just said. They're just burnt out, and so are students. So, Christy, I'm going to ask you a question about the pandemic, since we are talking COVID and pandemic. Community colleges, and I'm a huge advocate of community college. I've been with community colleges all my life. They've taken a huge hit in enrollment, minus about 14.1% since fall 2019.
Wow.
And yeah, it's a huge hit for the associate degree. And the associate degree is so valuable because it prepares a student for the workforce. So how do you think the nation's community colleges or rural community colleges have different challenges from urban ones? How do you think we can stem this decline in enrollment? It seems like it's spiraling further and further.
It is. I think it's the number one issue for most community colleges. We were lucky. We did not decline as much as many of our colleagues. I think last year we were about between 5% and 6% decline, and this year just a little over 1% decline. But even at a smaller or single digits, but it's still devastating to your budget as you're thinking about everything you need to do, looking into the new future. Equally devastating is it means there's a lot of people out there not getting education and training. So it's, you know, the decline in enrollment is just bad for the country in so many ways. And I think as community colleges, we're really looking to figure out how do we make sure that we're talking to the right populations of people to try to get them engaged in education and training, and then making sure once we get them engaged that we offer the supports they need to be successful.
Do you think, Amardeep, before you go again, do you think that that decline, because there's been a continuum, right? It was coronavirus, decline, people aren't going to school, they have to go to work. Then there was this middle part, which is now the issue of our time is to re-engage this lost population. We have continuing students that just disappeared and we got to get them back. And then now it's moved towards we need students, period. We got to engage the students that we have. We got to get new students. We got to bring back alumni for advanced degrees. We've got to do all these things together. Do you think that the decline is at all related to the way business and industry is perceiving degrees these days? Do you think that there's any, I don't know, I was having a conversation with somebody earlier today, and we were just talking about how what's going to happen with education if you see more and more employers get on this where you don't need a bachelor's degree train here, or you don't need an associate degree train. What does that do to U.S. higher education? Anyway, that's a big philosophical question, but do you see the decline related to anything in particular, do you think?
You know, I think it's less about businesses not believing they need individuals with either an associate's or a baccalaureate degree, and it's more they're just so desperate for employees. So what I see more is that as businesses are pulling them in and bringing people in maybe without the credentials that they traditionally would have, that community colleges will probably end up working directly with employers to help upskill now what's become an incumbent workforce. I think the sad thing for some of those folks who are going in without the credentials is when we see a downturn in the economy, that my gut tells me those without academic credentials are going to be hit the hardest at those times. So I think we have an immediate way to be able to help businesses upskill their workforce that they're bringing in, maybe without credentials, but it worries me long-term.
Amardeep, sorry to interrupt you on the last one.
No, you stole my question, Joe.
Well, that's what I do here at the EdUp Experience. You know, I didn't know you were going to ask it.
No, I'm kidding, of course. So, Christy, you know, this is fascinating. That last thing that you said, that when there's an economic downturn without the credential, it's going to be extremely difficult. But it seems like this is a steamroller that's just headed our way. The devaluation of the degree, that's what I call it. And not only that, it's the drop in funding. It seems like more and more the funders, which is AKA for community colleges, the only 73 private community colleges in the country, but for the rest of them, it's the states. They are more and more cutting down the appropriations to community colleges. So where do you see that going? And do you see that turning at all? Or how do you see community colleges going forward with, you know, innovative programs without the innovative funding?
You know, in Iowa, we've been lucky that we have not seen a decline in appropriations to community colleges in the last few years. Now, having said that, Iowa doesn't fund at the same level that some other states do, but our legislators and our governor have been very good about understanding that we impact workforce so directly. So we're seeing oftentimes new funding streams focus specifically on high demand careers. So in the state, we have the Last Dollar Scholarship, where if in-state students are pursuing a high demand career at a community college, tuition is paid for. And so I think we've been lucky, but part of that is that we've really been able to show the value we bring, especially in rural Iowa, in helping prepare a workforce.
Amar Deep's questions are like missiles. They're just absolutely like missiles. Nice job, Amar Deep. I get to ask the easy ones, but I'm going to let's warm you up too, Christy. You know, we just pound you with questions on that experience right from the get-go, but we like to have a little fun. If you've listened to a previous episode, you know that I like to ask a little bit of a curveball question to find out more about you. And since Amar Deep wasn't here, since I didn't do this the first time, I did ask the same question, but I added one since. And I'm going to ask you, Christy, both questions, and then Amar Deep gets to answer the one that you don't pick. Okay? Are you ready?
Sounds good.
There we go. Kind of has a little bit of game show feel this thing, doesn't it? I wish I could give you money. Anyway, so here's your two questions, Christy. Number one, it looks like you're in your office, by the way. Are you in your office?
Yes, I am.
I was going to say you got one hell of an at-home office if that was an at-home office. But you're in your office, and you imagine that there's a song that comes on every single time you walk into a room at Iowa Valley Community College District. It's your entrance music song, something that is all about you, Christy. What song would be playing? And or, here's your second choice, talk to us about the dream vacation that you need to take after all this COVID stuff. Where would you go? And then Amar Deep, you get to answer the one she doesn't pick.
Oh, let's see. I think I'm going to go with the music because I think I'd be hearing Bob Dylan singing The Times Are Changing.
Good one.
Because since I've only been here 2.5 years. And since I've been here, we've passed a bond issue, had a pandemic, had a derecho. I don't know if you know what those are. I didn't until we had one. It was
a what?
An inland hurricane. Iowa, for the first time in, I'm 50 years and I've lived here my whole life and had never heard about it. But last year, in the middle of a pandemic, we had a derecho and had $2 million worth of campus roofs taken off our buildings the week before classes. So it's all been about change since I've been here.
Wow. Good song. That is, I've never heard of a derecho. Draco?
Derecho.
There's no way I'm going to get it. You said it. I've never heard of that before, but it took your roof off?
Yeah, we had almost every roof on campus was damaged the week before class. You know, last August was such an easy month anyway with COVID-19. And then a week before classes were supposed to start, it was basically an inland hurricane and it hit a lot of Iowa, but just on our campus alone, we had $2 million worth of damage in about 45 minutes.
Oh my gosh, I cannot believe it. That is unreal. I feel so sorry for you and the students. That's just absolutely terrible. On a lighter note, Amar Deep, dream vacation.
I know. And by the way, the event that Christy was referring to is spelled D-E-R-E-C-H-O.
That's why I bring you want to ask you, Amar Deep. You're always going to give me a lesson. That's why I like to have you around.
So my dream vacation, oh my gosh, I would go for a dream vacation to a place called Ladakh in India, in North India, up way, way, way up in the hills where I've never been before. And I always wanted to go there. And as long as you're paying, I don't care.
Well, I would have taken that question if I knew Ed Up was paying for the dream vacation.
Nope.
Sorry about that, Amar. I just had to clarify. But yeah, that sounds pretty awesome. Well, you know, I like to do that just to, you know, lighten the load here because we just have such serious jobs, Christy. I mean, your job is a serious job. You've got so many stakeholders that you're balancing I was going to say managing, but it's more balancing, I think. Balancing the competing priorities of internal stakeholders, external stakeholders. How do you keep it all together? You say you've only been there 2.5 years, and I go, wow, what a incredible education that 2.5 years was in that scenario. Any 2.5 years, any president for the last 2.5 years, what they've gone through. How do you keep it together, and what do you do for yourself and staff to keep people fresh, right? We got to have some level of freshness as we move forward.
I think the way we kept it together here, and in particular me as a newer president, was that I had a good team of people around me. And so we really brought in lots of voices and internal experts to take care of the situations that we needed to deal with. And we did it together. So I think it's the only way you get through a normal year on a community college campus, and then you add in all the extra complexities, and it really is make or break it on the team. For myself, I go through spurts of doing better, but I try to find time to run and find time to read. I can tell you there was probably 9 months where that didn't happen during COVID-19, but really, focusing on that. And for our employees, I tell you, we never do enough. I mean, the people have just been so amazing here that we try to remind people, use your vacation, make sure you take time to relax and then to look at some things. Are there things we can take off people's plates that would have been an important initiative had it not been for everything else, but maybe it's just not something we need to do this year.
Amardeep, I'm going to pass it to you, but I want to ask one quick follow-up, Christy, and that's just networks. Talk about, do you pull on a network, or is your district members of a network of other presidents that you can pull on? Do you have mentors or mentees that you go, hey, you know what, this just happened to me and I can't believe it. What do I do? Who do you pull on for that?
You know, it's interesting. In Iowa, we don't technically have a community college system. So we don't have a system office. We're all local control. We all have our own boards, but the presidents in Iowa are amazing. And so if I pick up the phone and call any one of them, they give advice, counsel, they'll listen. So I'm just lucky to have a great group of colleagues in the state.
Lead Squared isn't only an enrollment CRM. It's a technology that will allow you to optimize your entire front-end student life cycle by providing decision makers with real-time customizable dashboards. Forecasting, measuring, and optimizing for key activities will increase retention and revenue, and Lead Squared will lower technology costs simultaneously. Not only can Lead Squared align with existing admissions processes, but the technology will also help you innovate beyond what you thought was possible. The ability to access data on your phone will keep you connected, and when you add in the world-class customer service, Lead Squared transcends being a technology. It's an experience. Check them out at leadsquared.com. Kind of like you giving me advice, Amardeep.
Yeah, so I'm going to move from challenges to values, not values, but value. I'm a big, like I said, big believer in community colleges. They provide such a tremendous value to the students, and I believe they're the ultimate gateway to the American dream, you know. And if somebody didn't know anything about community colleges, or they had a bias against community colleges, which never happens, right, Christy?
Never.
So how would you articulate the value of community colleges, both as workforce and as a mechanism to get to a four-year degree?
So first, I should tell you that I'm a community college graduate, and I went to community college in 1989 as a recent high school graduate, and it went to a community college because it's what my family could afford. And from there went on to get a baccalaureate and an MBA and a PhD. So I often talk to people about that, about what a community college is it's an open door for anyone in a community to find a way to step up and do something new. We're affordable. We are aware of what our needs are in our community. So we have programs that really serve our community both from an employer standpoint, but then it also means if we're putting students through those programs that are high demand in our local area, we're also putting students onto a path into a good career, which then also allows them to be successful within the community. So I think our community responsiveness, our affordability, and then high quality. And that high quality comes from the faculty and the staff.
I love
that. Christy, my favorite community college story related to this is a colleague of mine at a different college had a student come to her after a few semesters, I think, after he was her student, and said, I have to thank you because you changed my tax bracket.
Oh, that is about a family being self-sustaining for the rest of that student's life. I mean, it is. That's
amazing.
It is. It's amazing. I mean, we get to change lives all the time.
It's generational change, right?
It
to
is.
Your point, right? That's the importance of, and to your point, Amardeep, I think that the being a gateway to the American dream, it's absolutely true. It community colleges. I said this on a previous episode because I hear people say, excuse me. I see people say unbundling higher education all the time. We got to unbundle higher ed. It's bundled and we got to unbundle it. And I go, isn't that what community college is?
Yeah.
Isn't it unbundled higher education? You can go, you can take the classes that you want in the format that you want. You could take as many or as little as you want. You could work. You don't stay on campus. You stay in your house. You save money. You right. can do all of those things, right?
And don't forget the small class size, Joe.
Absolutely. So it's unbundled. So I guess I get aggravated because I'm like, what are you talking about? Unbundle education? It's been unbundled. There are greater problems than unbundling higher ed. The great problem we have is the challenge of the ROI. It's the challenge of value. And I worry about that because I just believe so highly in higher education. I like you guys, I went and got a doctorate degree. It's hard because who values higher ed? All these doctors sitting around in higher education that are telling everybody else to value higher ed. But you don't get there without seeing the value of education in the first place. And I worry that people are going to do themselves a disservice in the long run by taking, I think there are alternative pathways to take, but it has to lead to something greater. I worry about that. Christy, what do you think?
No, I agree. I think it's easy to beat up on higher education or look at student loans. And when you talked about the unbundling of higher education, that the community colleges also do that. And we also, like for us, we're also, both our colleges are residential. So we have students who live in dorms on campus. So one of the things I love is that we have that liberal arts experience, but we also have all the programs that go direct into workforce, and they are equally valuable because we all know that employers are also, in addition to needing warm bodies right now, they want people who are critical thinkers, who can communicate. And that's a liberal arts education. Whether you start at a community college or you're in a four-year space, those are critical skills. And we want people to be able to think in those ways.
Amardeep, I bring that back up, to what Christy's saying to you, because you know you're at a private university.
Yes.
But you have 100% online degrees, you have competency-based education. So other parts of higher ed are unbundled. And I just wonder when somebody, you know, when you have the thought leaders come on and they say these kind of things, I wonder if, do they look across all the higher ed models that exist? Or are we just talking about Ivy League universities or big private universities with billion-dollar endowments that aren't unbundling? I just wonder if there's just a lack of sight across the really innovative models that exist.
Are you asking me?
Yeah, I'm totally asking.
Yeah, you. Yeah. I totally believe that there is a lack of sight. I mean, forgive, I hope all the people from Ivy Leagues forgive me when they get out there and they start talking about how community colleges should be, unless you're from the Community College Research Center or somewhere there. But, you know, you just don't understand the challenges some of these students face. Joe, I'm at a private college. Unity College is a private college, but the institute that I'm setting up here, we're setting it up as a community college for associate degree with very low tuition and models to serve all kinds of populations. So that equity issue is really important to me. And it doesn't seem to be important to some people who are talking about higher ed.
Right. let's talk about equity issues in your area, Christy, because you are more rural, right? More rural-ish.
Yes, we are.
Is there a disparity in wealth in your areas? Is your district really helping close the equity gap, gender gap, the wage gaps? Or is there, and then is accessibility still an issue? Are there pockets in the rural areas where just education is not just getting to certain areas?
So I do think in the state of Iowa, we do a great job of serving the entire state, including the rural areas. And we do see, I mean, no different in a rural area than an urban area that you do see disparity between different populations. And we work really hard to do as much as we can with diversity and inclusion efforts. Now we have in Marshalltown, we have a large Latinx population. So this year we saw a growth, and what we don't know, we have over 18% of our student population at Marshalltown Community College is identifies as, now that's for the whole district, 18% for the whole district. And it's even higher than that in Marshalltown. And we saw a growth of 30% in that student population in the last year.
That's significant.
Yeah. What we don't know is, did more students feel comfortable reporting their ethnicity, or do we really have that many more students who are Latinx, and we see a large percentage of students that we have a lot of African-American students in particular up at Ellsworth. So both of our colleges have, in Ellsworth, we actually have a much higher percentage of minority students than what we would have in the community, because it's a community that's probably 96, 97% white, because it's more rural, the most rural of the communities. And, but we have, you know, I'm trying to look here quick on my numbers for, we have about 40% of our students district wide who identify with either a non-white race or ethnicity. So we have a high percentage of diverse students, and it makes you walk through our hallways and it is fabulous. You hear lots of different languages
and chatter. Mm-hmm.
It is fabulous. And our communities have been very supportive of that, and very supportive of bringing in students from different backgrounds and providing scholarships and really helping to lift up students who need that.
Amardeep, over to you if you have any more questions for Christy.
No, I really like what you just told me about your efforts at bringing in more marginalized students or non-traditional students into the higher ed, because as we know, you know, the weakest link is that part of society who we don't lift up. So when we talk about economic recovery, community colleges are an important part of that economic recovery that's going to happen. So tell me a fun fact about Iowa Valley colleges.
I'm going to tell you about a fun program that we have. That's one that I spent some time with some students sure. yesterday. We have a really successful energy programs. We do power line. So the technicians who climb up power lines, you need those after a derecho, and also our gas utilities are programs that we have waitlists in, and we have students who come out and make tremendous wages immediately. But one of the things we've done there is really trying to focus on getting more women into the program because it's been predominantly male, and more students of color. And just yesterday I had three young men who were all students of color who were talking about how they got into the program and how much they enjoy it and what they're doing to recruit their, you know, students from the high school that they came out of, thinking about getting those into those similar programs. So we're really excited about the work we're doing in that industry.
Just amazing.
Amardeep, keep going if you want to keep going.
No, go ahead. I just wanted to say that's amazing. And you know, you really need a drum roll here.
Well, I was going to say these guys going up the electricity poles.
You completely know. Out of your mind.
So they should get paid for bringing energy to us.
I agree. I love watching them do it. I've never said, hey, can I climb the pole?
Yeah, it's like that guy up there, I could do that.
Yeah.
They could pay me to do that. You see some jobs, you're like, I could do that job. That's not one where you go by. You see those guys up there, like, those guys are insane. So I have heard, and you've seen on the news, that possibly we are headed for a bunch of shortages of all sorts of stuff, right? Toys. In my area, there's people like hoarding glass jars now because they're going to start jarring food, and they're buying up all, you know, it's like a doomsday scenario, and you see the doomsday guys, and they got, you go in their cellar and they've got jarred everything, and, you know, all this stuff. Is that an issue in your area? Is that coming up? Are there people walking off jobs? Are you having to, is there just work shortages where the businesses are looking at you and going, hey, Christy, can you pump out some students that have some skills? Because we cannot hire enough people.
Yes, every day I hear it. Just this week, Tuesday morning, we met with employers who needed industrial maintenance technicians, and we had them in the lab, and we were brainstorming on things we can do to increase that pipeline. One of the things we're doing there with the local employer is we teach classes that start from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., and then another group that goes from 10 p.m. until midnight, because that's when the folks who are going through that, some of the industrial maintenance training are available. So we're doing that. And then we're also just working with employers to think through, are there ways that kind of back to that unbundling again, that they can look at our credit programs and think about kind of a la carte choices of classes that they might need for some of their existing workforce. And then, as always, working with high school students to get them interested early in those high demand careers.
Yeah, I've got a big question about how these shortages affect, or one of the things I'm thinking forward about and trying to is, does that mean that you're going to have people that won't want to invest in themselves right now because they're afraid of financial shortage, right? Of losing a job or walking off a job, so they're not going to go to school? Like that, I think about that all the time.
You know, I think it's absolutely true that anytime there's high employment, you usually see declines in community college enrollment, because there's jobs that are beckoning you and you don't think about stepping back from a paycheck. But then that's when it's really important for us as community colleges to think about, okay, how do we do some creative things part-time? How do we work with employers to make sure that we can continue to keep getting people trained, even if they don't have time to be here full-time?
Yeah, it's going to be a really big issue to see how, you know, because I was like, yeah, this, you're in the United States. We don't really have shortages. What do we have shortages of? Toilet paper? Oh, yeah. Wait a minute. Yeah, we did have a shortage of toilet paper. I mean, I was at a grocery store one time and somebody tried to break in. Literally, I'm in a grocery store and somebody tries to kick in like a storage door to rush in and take toilet paper. I'm like, where are you going with handfuls of toilet paper? Like, somebody's not going to tackle you? You know, so it makes us all crazy. And then I just think about how that affects or perpetuates enrollment declines in higher ed, value of higher ed, you know, financial models for some of these schools that are just closing. You know, you sound like you're in a good position in Iowa and well-funded. There's a lot of schools out there that are not, and they're already wondering how to tackle these problems. So, you know, I think services become an issue. Like, what are we offering students to keep them engaged, to give them the ability to feel supported? Can you talk about the support services you may have put in place lately or ones that you might look at in the future?
Absolutely. Well, we've always had tutoring and support services around if somebody has a special need because of a disability. But in addition to that, from an engagement standpoint, we're also trying to find ways to connect students to the campus. I mentioned that we're residential campuses at both Ellsworth and Marshalltown. So finding ways to make sure students have fun in the environment. Last night, we did our annual pumpkin jamboree where our students set up all kinds of, they set up exhibits and games and trick-or-treating, and they invite all of the children from the community to come on campus. And we have hundreds of students who come on and spend time here decorating pumpkins and seeing our lab animals and doing their trick-or-treating. But as much as all those kiddos have fun, our students feel so engaged and part of it, and they love it because they all said how much they missed it last year because of COVID. So we're looking at things, not just academic supports, but also some of those social supports to make sure that students have a way to feel connected and engaged.
I'm just loving everything you all are doing. It's amazing.
I love everything we do too. We're a great place. I left the pumpkin jamboree last night and I was smiling, but I had tears in my eyes because I thought this is so cool. This is what a community college does. And it's just, it's amazing.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Joe, can I go?
Sure. What do you mean? Can you go? You're here. You do whatever
I
you
mean,
want.
Not go, but can I go next?
So let's get started.
So Christy, I have a question for you. You know, one of the things you just touched on it about, and Joe touched on it, colleges closing, you know, colleges that don't either have their financial model together or just have faced such incredible challenges that they have no choice but to close. And some colleges that are historic. But one of the things that I've found in talking to some people is that whole viewpoint of, but we've always done it this way. So, you know, if you were to say a couple of things to higher ed industry in general, what would you say about that phrase, but we've always done it this way?
I think taking the approach that we've always done it that way is a blueprint for how you're going to close a college. Because anytime you're looking back, it means there's somebody else around you who's looking forward and they're going to overtake you. So from a business standpoint, it just doesn't make sense. From a serving student standpoint, you can't be providing students what they need in today's world and preparing them for tomorrow's world if you're still doing everything like you did it yesterday.
That is the mic drop moment of this episode. Well said. If you want a blueprint for closing a college, go back to what you're doing before. Mm-hmm. Absolutely true, Amardeep, don't you think?
Yeah, perfect. You know, I always say we don't drive 100-year-old cars, but we are still following that 100-year-old system of education.
You know what, though? I do wonder, I mean, that gets said so often, but I know so many colleagues around the country who aren't really following a 100-year-old model of education. So I think sometimes it's we forget to celebrate and acknowledge all the different things that are happening. And it's easier to kind of think of that traditional model. But I have a lot of faith in American higher education because I do believe there are institutions who are doing the hard work of changing and adapting for the future. And so I'm optimistic.
Well, that's a good segue for us to ask you the final two questions that we have, because I think some of the sentiments that you just said are going to be included in our final question. But so we've got two more for you. Number one, what did we miss about Iowa Valley? Excuse me. See, this is the second time that's happened. Iowa Valley Community College District. I have a cough button here. I won't hit it. What did we miss about Iowa Valley Community College District? Anything you want to say?
You know, initiatives I think what
that you have. Go ahead.
One of the things that we're really proud of, and I probably didn't talk about as much because I said workforce, is that our transfer programs, we really pride ourselves on high quality instruction in every classroom. So we have students who start at the community college as a way, affordable way to test out some different majors. And once they've earned their associate's degree, they go on to universities and colleges elsewhere and just really succeed. And so we're really proud of that. And I sometimes forget to mention that. So I want to make sure you know how great our transfer programs are as well.
Well, that's great. I'm glad we could slide that in. And that's not me. Hold on a second. Okay. Now we get it. So the moneymaker is a little rough today, Amardeep. I'm in trouble talking today. I don't know what it is. And then lastly, and I think most importantly, what do you view as the future of higher education? Christy, you touched on it a little bit, but kind of give us a 1-minute breakdown.
I think the future of higher education is going to be student focused, but by being student focused, we're going to understand what our country and our communities need so that as we're getting students ready to go out into the world, that we're setting them up to be successful in a career and to continue to grow and add value in their local communities. And I really hope that it's going to be a place that continues to welcome all types of people from all different backgrounds and bring them together in really positive ways.
I love that. And I appreciate that.
I do. I love amazing. That. That was the best.
Good conversation. A little rough because of me and the fact that I can't seem to talk today. I've got a lot going on here. But so many important themes, jobs, operations, and most importantly, I think leadership, because you can't do the first two without the third. Christy, you sound like an amazing leader that really cares about her staff and faculty. And I think that's so, so important because it's leadership of the future. We are in it right now. We are in leadership of the future.
Right.
I agree. And that was great fun having a conversation with you.
Well, let me just say first that as we close this episode out, that my co-host today, my guest co-host, Dr. Amardeep Kalan, it was an absolute honor to have you back.
Thank you.
This button from now on, it's going to say Amardeep on it. So I know that every single time you come on, it's going to be you. And say what your name means one more time.
The Eternal Light.
Yes. And I just know it's going to say the Eternal Light, Amardeep, and then I'm going to play it every time you come on. It's an absolute pleasure to have you. And then, you know, Christy, so much fun. How was your EdUp experience today, Christy?
Oh, it was wonderful. It was nice to have a chance to just talk about education and community colleges, because we're often our head is down and we're doing the work. So it's fun to talk to colleagues. So thank you.
Well, and I want to make it clear for all of our listeners, it's funny because if you could see Christy right now, she's got a cup of coffee in her hand and see the steam coming out, and she really is relaxed. That's what the EdUp experience is supposed to be all about. This is not structured. We do not pre-plan the questions. We are people. We're rougher on the edges. We have successes. We have failures. If you're going to come on this podcast and think you have to get everything right, I promise you, I mess up the entire time and I don't edit any of it out because, gosh, we're just not perfect. So let's have a good time and let's have natural conversations with one another. My guest again today, Dr. Christy Fischer. She's chancellor at Iowa Valley Community College District. And it was a pleasure to have you, Christy.
Thank you.
So nice to meet you, Christy.
Nice to meet you.
And so lovely to hear. It's just beautiful, everything you've told me about your colleges.
Well, thank you. We're lucky to do
that. You have it. You've just EdUpped. The Lead Squared integrated CRM functionality will put your institution at the front end of marketing and enrollment strategy by delivering a streamlined admissions process. Capture student interest, segment your audience, create student engagement workflows, and even integrate with your student information system to create longitudinal key performance metrics you've always wanted. You can do all of this and lower your technology costs. Check out leadsquared.com for more info.